Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to F1 Explains, the official Formula One podcast, which explains stuff about F1, stuff that you want explaining. You email F1Explained at F1.com with your questions about this brilliant but slightly mad at times sport, and we find the best people in the paddock to answer them. My name is Christian Hugill, and alongside me this week is a man so qualified to analyse and explain Formula One that he hosts an F1 TV show where he does just that. Now, I won't give away the identity of my guest just yet because I'm sort of giving him the big introduction, but the show is called Palmer's Analysis. So that's a clue. He's raced in 35 Formula One Grand Prix for Renault. He's a GP2, the artist's now known as Formula 2 champion, and he's often found in the commentary box of a race weekend alongside David Coulthard and Alex Jakes. Jolyon Palmer, welcome back to F1 Explains.
Hello, thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure.
Well, it's always lovely to have you, Jolyon. We've had a lot of emails on this particular topic, one of which is from Brian in Phoenix, Arizona. Now, Brian is relatively new to Formula One and says he loves the podcast. So in the world of Charles Leclerc, thank you, Brian. I'm going to read...
It must be the water.
I'm going to read Brian's email. He says, I'm a software engineer and I'm absolutely fascinated by the sheer amount of data that comes from what seems like every millimeter of an F1 car. How fast it's relayed to race engineers, the FIA, the TV broadcast. How does this telemetry system work on a car going in excess of 300 kilometers an hour around a several kilometer long racetrack in almost real time? Brian goes on to say, is there a shared standard set of sensors or data that all the car must have or all the cars can't have? Do the teams access each other's data as part of their strategy? Thank you for the most amazing podcast and making F1 accessible and understandable for newcomers. I don't know of any other sport that helps educate fans like F1. That is a lovely email from Brian, Jolyon Palmer. And I remember us chatting in Monaco when we recorded a quickfire episode. And you said to me there, I've spent my life looking at data. So this world of data that we're explaining this week on F1 Explains, something you must have dived into an awful lot in your years in this sport.
Yeah, it's probably my guilty pleasure. It's squiggly lines on a screen. it's your Bible as a driver is looking at data, because it's just how you can improve. So whatever you do a lap, you come back in, you see those squiggly lines, and that is your recipe book for how to improve, how to go quicker, why things are happening in your car. It's your own F1 Explains as a driver is, okay, that's the lockup there, but I can see it's caused by this maybe. And so even in previous generations, they didn't have this luxury. They'd go out, someone would have a stopwatch on the main straight, they'd be back in 90 seconds, and then have to just work out how to go faster. And if they were 3/10 down, you just push a bit harder everywhere. But now you can sort of pinpoint it to the right area.
Well, Jolyon, we're going to talk more about your guilty pleasure, the data, particularly from a driver's perspective, in a moment. Stay there. But first, it's time to welcome back an F1 Explains favourite. And to do that, we have come to McLaren, and Oscar Piastri's race engineer, Tom Stallard, is alongside me. Tom, hi. Welcome back to F1 Explains. The last time you were on the podcast was back in Australia, which seems like several years ago to me. I don't know if it does to you.
Time flies when you're having fun, right?
You guys are having fun this season. You're having a lot of fun. Tom, thank you for joining us. Firstly, let's really start with the basics on all this data stuff. And this is quite a big question, I'm aware. How much data does a Formula One team collect during a race weekend?
I mean, all of the data. You
infinite like, data.
You can hardly imagine. The car itself has sort of 400 sensors on it. On board the car, that processes them into about 2,000. That then comes off the car, goes into another computer, which processes more of them. So that makes about 4,000 in total coming back from the car, from one car. We have two cars. So
famously.
Yeah, so there's all of that data coming from the car. There's also the video feed, so we have onboards for all of the cars. We have all of the radio comms from the other teams. We have GPS data from the other cars as well. So there's a lot of data. There's a lot of data to look at. And to get through all that, we need many more people than just the people at the track. So we have a mission control back at McLaren, which is another 32 or so people, I think. And then there's another 50-odd on a Friday in the office as well, looking at a lot of the more of the sort of reliability data.
That is something that I think is sometimes forgotten in F1, that we watch the telly at home and see everybody in the pit wall, on the garage, but it isn't just there, is it? It's that data is being analysed back in Woking, in your guys' sake, back at MTC. Now, we've had a listener called Brian who sent us lots of questions on data. Brian is very interested in data. This is the first one of Brian's questions. And he says, where on an F1 car is the data generated from? Sounds to me from your previous answer, Tom, that we're talking pretty much everywhere.
Pretty much everywhere, yeah. So we are measuring, obviously there's a lot of data coming from the engine itself. We are measuring things that we need to understand how the driver's driving the car. So that will be things like the steer angle, throttle position, brake power, slip angles. We have a slip sensor on the car so we can measure how the tires are moving and sliding. We're then measuring all of the loads in suspension, all of the internal positions of the suspension. And from that, we can calculate how far the car is off the ground. We're also double checking that using lasers, etc. And then the whole car has a couple of hundred pressure sensors over it as well to measure the aerodynamic performance. So we can use that to assess how well it's performing aerodynamically, if things are broken aerodynamically, if things aren't quite in the position we thought they were aerodynamically. So, for example, in the race, when we pick up a little bit of damage from a contact or something, then we can assess what the penalty is for that.
I'm worried that I'm not intelligent enough to ask the question in my head. So bear with me, but I'm going to have a real go at this. You've just said that there's all this data. There's loads of it. It comes in from pretty much everywhere. But surely is that too much data? Or is Formula One only measuring the data it wants to use? Is there a point where this data has to get filtered? If it was just raw data, would it be far too much? Or are you guys generating the right amounts? Do you see what I'm getting at here?
So all the data we're generating gets looked at, or at least all of the sensors that are on the car generate data that gets looked at.
So you're not having to filter it too much because it's all useful?
Because it's all useful.
Right, that's what I'm getting
at. And all of those sensors, it might only be a few grams, but that's still a few grams of weight that
sure.
You don't want. So all of those sensors have to justify their weight on the car. Then obviously what doesn't add weight is if you take two sensors and add them together and then divide them by the output of another sensor, you can get some interesting channels out like that. Those sort of mathematical data channels, if you like, that we use, those don't add weight to the car, so those can multiply quite quickly.
So there's not too much of an example where you'll say, okay, I don't need to look at that data too much, that's not relevant to me. Most of the data you're seeing is there for a reason because it's relevant to you.
None of it is relevant to me. There's about seven channels that are relevant to me as the race engineer for Oscar. That's the 70 people that I spoke about previously who
it's
are looking at
the
all that.
It's relevant to the person who's looking at it, sure. So it goes to the right person.
They will come to me with the interesting things they've picked up from that data where that's important.
See, I'd never thought of that before until having this conversation, because you hear people say, well, we need to look at the data, but like that could be infinite amounts of data. So that's fascinating in itself, that it sort of gets filtered to the right person. That's really interesting. And right, you mentioned the driver, you're looking after Oscar, and we're going to speak to Jolyon Palmer a little later to talk about this from a driver's perspective a little bit more. But from your standing time, as someone who works closely with a driver, where does the driver come into in this process? Do you analyze the data on your own with other engineers in the team before discussing your findings with Oscar, or is it a right, let's go through this together, Oscar? How does that work?
So it's very much a mix, but one of the hard things is to, this is going to sound really obvious, but to find what the driver's talking about. The driver will say, I go into this corner, the car kind of moves, and then it kind of oversteers a bit, and trying to actually, like, generally they exaggerate as much as I just did as well. When they say the car kind of moves,
it's a
you look in the data
problem.
And it's like 3/4 of a millimeter. And so they help a lot with picking through to find exactly what they're talking about, what they're feeling. This isn't relevant. This is relevant. This bit's important. So they are very, very expert at going through that, but with us, kind of escorted through the data by the engineering team. And as much as I joked that I only look at 7 channels, that the reality is when we start digging into a problem, we'll then add in more and more channels to try and figure out exactly what's going on.
I mean, 7 channels is a large number of channels. I think no matter how you look at it, 7's a fairly big number. That's a lot of channels to look at from my perspective. So now, it's gone relatively under the radar. It's barely been discussed, but McLaren's drivers are fighting for the Drivers' Championship.
I hadn't noticed.
Yeah, I know. It's barely got any coverage. McLaren have also been so consistent with the message this year that we are a team. We always put the team first. It was the same last year. You've won the Constructors' Championship twice in a row, so congratulations. I should really have said that at the start, but congratulations. Now, with that in mind, when you've got 2 drivers who, of course, want to win the Drivers' World Championship, but you are a team, it is a team sport, you've got the Constructors to think of, which you've successfully won, does that have a factor to think about when it comes to data? Do the drivers want to hide a bit of data from each other? Are you having to think what one side of the garage is thinking compared to the other, because there is that naturally there's that competitive element?
I think there probably, through the history of Formula One, then there are examples where that's been a problem. But all of the data is available to both cars within McLaren, and actually within our race engineering group, we have a really good, and across the whole team as well, it's unfair to say just within the race engineering group, we have an incredibly collaborative relationship, and it's very much like, how do we use the data to make the team go faster? So although some of it we're using to coach the drivers, I've not seen any kind of efforts from either driver to kind of hide things from their teammate or anything like that. Actually, we very much use that to just push the next level up. So as much as they want to beat each other, I think they both have quite good awareness that you like Oscar wants to beat the best version of Lando.
Yeah, sure. And I think actually not only is that a testament to McLaren, from my understanding of talking to people up and down the paddock, it's actually a testament to modern F1 that I remember I've been speaking to Ollie Bearman this season about learning from his more experienced teammate Esteban Ocon, and he's talked about the sharing of data. So I think that happens more frequently in F1. Only the day before we're recording this interview, Tom, I heard an interview with Juan Pablo Montoya, who raced for Williams in the 2000s, and he was saying he spoke more to Ralf Schumacher, his teammate at the time, after they'd finished racing, than they did when they were together. There was no sharing of data. There was no sharing of information. Yes, they were both racing Williams, but they were so separate in their battle with each other. There was none of this sharing of data. It doesn't, to me, feel like... It sort of feels like F1's evolved a little bit since then.
Yeah, certainly. I think McLaren... I mean, I've been at McLaren now since 2008. And in the period that I've been involved with the team, then actually it's been super collaborative across both sides of the garage. And I think that is one of the things that's helped push us forward.
Now, we often see certain people in Formula One. Adrian Newey's a very good example of it, where when the cars go out on the grid, they're as keen as they can be to go and have a good look. Sebastian Vettel was another one who used to have a little look, little inspections on the grid. Now, how much data on other cars, on other teams do you have? And is a lack of that perhaps why we see people like Adrian, and there'll be other examples, getting a good look at cars when they possibly can?
Yeah, I mean, so we have their onboard video. We have their GPS speed. We have their radio communications back to their pit wall, so from the driver to the pit wall, but we obviously don't have any of their behind-the-scenes radio. They'll have, you know, probably 50-odd radio channels going on behind the scenes that we don't have access to. So realistically, 98% of what we can learn from other teams will come from one of those three sources. And that means one of the really difficult things is to know why someone's quicker than you or why you're quicker than someone else. Is it because of an aerodynamic reason, because their driver's doing a great job, because they've got the tires working better? So it's the competitor analysis. We have a whole team of people doing competitor analysis, and they have a really difficult job because it's we don't have great information about the competitors compared to what we know about our car.
Now, moving away from the car more to the drivers, this question is from Tia from Brackley, a motorsport part of the world, Brackley in the UK. Tia says, "Hey, Christian, I recently went to the F1 exhibition in London, and my question is about drivers' gloves and specifically the sensor inside them. The team at the exhibition explained there is a 3mm sensor inside a driver's glove to send information to the team. I did not know that. I would like to know, what data does that sensor collect?"
I think we've got rid of it.
Do you? It's gone.
Yeah. We no longer have a sensor in the driver's glove. So we did measure heart rate and I think skin temperature inside the driver's glove.
And blood oxygen levels, I believe.
But that we no longer run. So now they run accelerometers in their earpieces that measure kind of head G-forces if they're in an accident, so we can use that to gauge concussion. But as far as I'm aware, we've got rid of the sensor in the driver's glove.
And this is the rate of evolvement, if that's even a word, in Formula One. Evolution, thank you. Evolution. Tom, there's a reason I present podcasts and you do proper job. Like, there's a reason. Evolvement. That even since Tia has been to F1 exhibition, it's moved on. The tech's moved on. Lovely. Unlike my vocabulary, it seems. Tom, you mentioned earlier that your F1 career started with McLaren in 2008. I just wonder how much has it changed in terms of data since then? 2008 to me seems like only yesterday in Formula One, but here we are in 2025. All of a sudden, that was quite a while ago. As the role of data, the amount of data, the type of data, how much has that changed in that time?
It has changed a lot. There's a lot more now, as you would imagine. Actually, our capacity to have people look at that from back home has gone up a lot. So all of the lags inherent in getting data back to the UK has gone up a lot. Our ability, so in 2008, we had the sensors, but we had very little capacity to add them all together. And what we could add together was entirely off the car, so it was delayed by 10 or 20 seconds, where now all of those kind of combined channels are coming, you know, less than a second behind the leading edge of the data. So it has come on a long way. I also think with that, the number of people competent to look at data in real time within a team has gone up a lot.
That's interesting.
It's quite different trying to follow the leading edge of the data and watch it kind of scroll past at 320 kilometres an hour compared to sitting down on the following Tuesday and loading up overlays and that sort of thing. So I think there's been a growth in competence of the teams within that area, that specific area. And also just the, you know, you can imagine that computers from 20 years ago, things have sped up quite a lot.
Things have moved on. I think I've realised about myself that one of the things I like about F1 is data. When I'm doing research for presenting, I'm looking at the races, I'm recording the results, and I found myself being like, I really enjoy this. Now, I guess in working in F1, that's something I didn't realise about myself until working in it from being a fan. Jolyon Palmer earlier on in the podcast said that data's his guilty pleasure. Is it with you? Do you like a bit of data? Do you like a dive through a data?
Yeah, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's super nerdy, but
yeah. I'm the same.
And I think that one of the things that I've really learned since coming into F1 is to be wary of moving too quickly to an opinion and actually like start from, right, what facts can I demonstrate from data,
yeah,
whatever that data may be, and then try and formulate an opinion based on that sort of grounding of like a few really solid facts rather than opinion first and then let's see if I can find some data to support it.
And are some drivers better at absorbing it than others in your experience?
Yeah, I think so. But they're all still at you know, by the time they get into Formula One, they're at an incredibly high level.
So we're doing it for ages.
When you consider, like, I, you know, went to University of Cambridge and studied engineering, and I'm at one level, and then they're comparable. A lot of them left school at 16. They're, you know, they're phenomenal, really, for that.
Yeah, Kimi Antonelli still doing his exams down the road. Yeah, and he's been looking at data all his career. Tom, this has been fascinating, as always. Thank you very much for helping us understand data a little bit more. And we'll look at data in even more detail with Jolyon Palmer in just a second on F1 Explains.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Welcome back to F1 Explains. We are diving into the world of data, which, before we heard from Tom at the top of the show, Jolyon Palmer described as his guilty pleasure, which I really enjoyed. Jolyon, are you ready to dive into your guilty pleasure in far more detail?
Always. Let's do it.
Now, Pill in Melbourne is another who sent us an email on this. Now, Pill says, all the drivers talk about looking at the data. What exactly are they looking at, and what are they looking for, Jolyon?
That's a big question.
And you've got unlimited time to answer it. All right, if you take 3 hours, go for it.
Settle in.
Grab a all right, book,
so
everyone.
The first thing is, you're as a driver, your main reference point is your speed trace along a lap. So you'd come in, you'd get a comparison with yourself and your teammate typically, and you get like sort of 5, 6, 7 channels all on one page. But the first one that your eyes will go to is the speed trace. So that is the speed of your car around the whole lap. So it goes up as you're on the straights, and then you can just see the line plummet as you hit a corner.
So to interrupt you already, you know, if there's a corner, say like a fast sweeping corner,
yeah,
would your speed trace mean that, for example, if your teammate was carrying 1 or 2 kilometres more per hour in that particular corner, is your speed trace showing that?
Yeah, so that it's your difference around the Fine. Lap. So yeah, yeah. Any time someone is quicker or slower in speed, which is obviously how we're all measuring performance.
Yeah, it really helps, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that is basically, are you doing better or worse? You know, you can have some corners where you carry more speed in, lose on the way out. So you're trying to look at, is it worth carrying more speed there to lose speed on the way out? But everything, your 101 is in this speed trace. And then sort of with that, you've got a time difference. So you can see if that speed is, you know, beneficial on the way in or costing you more on the way out. So that's your main thing. And if I'm on a quick qualifying turnaround and I'm back in the garage, right, data print out on the screen quickly, that's where my eyes will go to. And I'll see, right, oh, okay, my teammate's now quicker in turn 9. That's where I'm going to find the time. There's 2 tenths there. Bam, go and do it. I don't need to see any more than that. But then you could have deep dives where, I mean, the channels are unlimited. But the big ones would be gear usage. Teammate might be a gear up, gear down in a corner. You've got throttle usage, brake pressure. They're probably the other key ones that you're looking at. RPM as well is sort of linked to gear usage and throttle.
It fascinates me because we actually, Jolyon, the podcast I mentioned earlier that we recorded in Monaco, we mentioned briefly my brief foray into karting, where everything was done on feeling when I was racing. We didn't have data.
Me too, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like, if I felt I was slower in a particular section of the lap, it was like, we'll try going a bit slower into the corner in order to be able to get your foot on the accelerator.
But you don't know, right?
No.
So you're having to just try things and see what gives better lap time.
Yes, that's exactly the point I'm making. It's like, well, I might be able to get my foot down earlier if I go in a bit slower, but you're just guessing. This is about Beth's question. Beth, thank you for this. Beth says, I'm thinking about the balance the drivers have between relying on the physical sensations of force, sound, vibration, etc., and the info coming from their steering wheel, earpiece, visual lights, data. I'm interested in hearing a driver's perspective on this. Is there a balance we had, Jolyon, of looking at the graphs, looking at the data, and also going off your gut feeling sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Because also some drivers have different styles. It's not necessarily, I mean, it's the amount of times, if everyone could just do what the data said, you know, we'd all be close to absolutely perfect.
Brake later, so I will brake later and that's it.
Yeah, but it doesn't work out like that. So sometimes you brake later and you actually, I don't have necessarily the skill set my teammate has to brake as late, still carry speed into the apex. Maybe I'm missing this, the little bit of setup that he's got that dials that in. So you have to also go off your own feeling. And sometimes you can get lost trying to replicate your teammate's corner and actually make yourself slower, not finding the lap time that you were expecting. So you lose that gut feel that everyone has to be in Formula One in the first place.
I'd never thought of something you've just said there. Your commentary box mate, David Coulthard, was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. I had a fascinating chat with DC years ago where he said to me that when he was racing in Formula One, he believed he was the best in the world. He had to. And he said, his words, that only now he's retired does he look at, say, Mika Hakkinen, his teammate at the time at McLaren, who won world championships. But DC said, I just realised I don't have what Mika's got. That must be so frustrating for a driver if you are looking at data that says he's doing that, whether it is carrying a bit more speed into a corner, breaking later, and you can't find the way to do it. That's what makes different drivers different skill sets, right?
Yeah, so I had this before as well when I was teammates with Nico Hülkenberg, and he had a different driving style to me, and there was a point in the season about midway through and he was trouncing me, and I was looking at his data, I was thinking, right, why he's braking so early and so soft but carrying speed in. My approach was always brake as late as you can, really hard, stamp on the pedal, carry the entry speed and sort it out after. And so I remember I went to Baku and had a miserable weekend, but it started off trying to, that's by the by, started off trying to drive like him. Yeah. And so I was just coming to a corner, just braking like artificially early, because that's what I could see the data was doing. But my skill set just couldn't work out. So I ended up being a little bit slower than him, being really slow, because I just couldn't work the lap time. So I had to get back to my driving style to at least be where I was. And we've sort of seen that a little bit with the Red Bull guys in recent years. Obviously, Max has a very bespoke style, has a feeling with the car. And when you get the second driver no longer driving on their instinct and they're trying to look too much at copying Max and just doing what Max does, we've seen it with a few of the guys recently. They just tailspin into this losing their own natural rhythm, which was maybe a 2 or 3 tenths down on Max, to being sort of half a second, 6 tenths down on Max, because they're just trying to copy Max without the skill set.
It's fascinating. It really is fascinating. And we're looking at this from the perspective of reviewing data after and in between sessions. But what about the data you're receiving while you're actually driving the car? Obviously, we know, those of you who've been with F1 Explains for a while know that the only person talking to the driver in the car is the race engineer. So, Jolyon, what data are you getting during the sessions on the team radio from your race engineer? And how differently do you process that compared to in a debrief, for example?
So, I mean, it's way more limited. I used to get very, very little, but you might get the occasional, if you're, again, you're lapping, maybe more in the sort of race runs now, maybe in the Grand Prix, and the race engineer can see all these squiggly lines coming up in real time. You're obviously driving the car, head in the zone, and they can see, oh, every time he's losing 3 tenths in one corner, just getting a bad exit. So they might say, just by the way, you're losing, main loss here is turn 16. Turn 3, whatever it is. Someone like Lando, we hear a lot from Will Joseph on the radio, saying, you know, getting that level of coaching, because he obviously wants to absorb all that information as much as possible. Mm. Other drivers, they don't want to hear it. They want to just feel it out at that point.
And that must be something that you have to communicate with your race engineer as you're building up that relationship with them. I actually like to hear this. I don't like to hear this.
Because of the reason before as well, you know, you can then, if you're driving to the best of your own ability, and then you start to do things differently when you're in the rhythm of a race, can actually just mess with you a little bit as well. So you need to build that up with your race engineer, and it's part of like the whole dialogue of working with a race engineer, which I'm sure is a different topic. But apart from that, you've got just your absolute rudimental stuff, you know, gaps to the cars ahead, behind, lap times ticking down, temperatures, you're not really too worried about them in the race unless there's an alarm or anything that you need to switch that you'll probably be told about on the radio. So it's just crack on with it on race day.
Jules from Chicago's asked a great question. Thanks for this, Jules. Jules says, obviously drivers are known for what happens during the race weekend. It's what we've just been talking about, Jolyon, with analysing that data. But during the week, I presume they're likely to be doing physical exercises, training, travelling to the next race. But what else are drivers doing in the week in relation to work. So do they have to review data from previous or upcoming Grand Prix? So they have meetings with engineers or go to the factory? Or does it vary team by team, driver by driver? Really interesting point from Jules. I mean, I guess, Jolyon, even from when, you know, you didn't finish racing in F1 all that long ago, but there's now lots more races then. We're at 24 races in a season. I'm guessing there's less time to be doing that sort of thing in between races now?
Marginally, but everyone's still doing it. So your race engineers are flying back between races. They'll fly back Sunday night, get back into work on, could be a Monday, but probably a Tuesday. And they are going to be looking all the way through at what went right and wrong. So they are going to be doing this debrief. The drivers will then plug in or not to that. They might just turn up on the next weekend, especially back-to-back outside of Europe, where there's less time, you're not back in the office. They'll probably just dial back in, or they'll have a, you know, phone call or whatever and catch up on things. And some drivers, they get very little out of it. If you take Max, for example, he probably hasn't had to bother looking at a teammate's data for a very long time because he's learning nothing from it.
Nice.
You know, he's too quick for them.
He's just really quick, isn't he? Doesn't need to bother, yeah.
Whereas you've got someone like Lewis who's come over from Mercedes to Ferrari, learning a new way of life, new car, got a new teammate as well who's very quick. So he's probably pouring in more to try and get up to speed quicker. So he'll be dialing a little bit more in between the races and making sure that he's bang on it. It really depends on the driver.
I'm slightly veering off topic here, which regular listeners will know is not exactly unusual, but nothing makes me feel more inferior in this sport than when you're driving, well, not driving, famously, you can't drive back from Japan, when you're flying back from somewhere like Japan, as we were earlier in the season, and I see Tom Stallard, guest on this very episode, at the airport, and I am absolutely knackered. The weekend has killed me. I am like so ready for my bed. It's 7 o'clock in the morning at London Heathrow Airport. I am just counting down until I can get in a taxi and go to bed. And Tom says to me, "Oh no, I'm off to the factory."
What? It's brutal. That is so brutal.
To do all that data stuff that you were saying, they're off to the factory to look at the data. I haven't even gone home yet.
But the drivers do the same. Sometimes they'll be going straight from the track to the sim. And some of it's correlation stuff as well. And some of it, then once you're there, you'll sit through and go through the data and work out, you know, the why things have gone right or wrong straight after it.
There's a reason that you guys do
it's
that.
It's a nuts
and
world.
I'm on podcasts.
Yeah.
There really
but
is.
But now I'm on this side of it as well. The thought of doing it is pretty crippling.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
How much is data analysis a big part of your preparation and training when you're climbing up the ladder? How much data is there in junior series compared to when you get to Formula One?
Your basics stay exactly the same. So, you know, the key parts I've described, they're there from even from karting now. So if you went back and started your career again, that's why all the new generations always come through with better training, better preparation. And that's now filtering down to your 4-year-old starting out karting or whatever. So, you've got that. In Formula One, you've got the channels are just endless. So you can go through the settings to find any little, you know, the wind, gust of wind that everyone complains about or whatever. They've got loads of stuff on there now that you don't have in junior series. But from a driving point of view, honestly, the main thing is what I've described. And you're getting that now. I think even the guys in karting are looking at that when they come in.
They are, because I felt really old when I finished racing karts in 2009. And I was at, for those non-UK listeners, there is a big like motor racing show called the Autosport Show that's always in Birmingham, and it's sort of like a big coming together of the motorsport industry that happens every winter. And I walked through that a couple of years ago and saw a sim and data setup going around the circuit I used to race at, Wilton Mill in Northamptonshire. And I was like, oh my God, they've got sims in karting now. And
it's like, the world's moving on, isn't it?
It made me feel really old because we had nothing. It was, there was your little speedo thing on the steering wheel and there was no other tech.
Part of me misses that though.
Yeah.
Because you've got like your two style of drivers. You've got your driver that will jump into anything, rag it round based on pure natural flair and skill, who would have thrived in days gone by. And then you've got your thinking drivers, which, to be honest, was probably more me. Maybe didn't have like the natural talent of some of the other drivers in F1, but I would work on it. I'd look through all of this data and try and understand how to be quick. But I like the idea of getting rid of it and just all right, I need to find 3/10. I'll just go a bit faster.
You just
everywhere.
Go and find
then.
3/10 somewhere. And finally, Jolyon, a lovely question from Adam from Pittsburgh in the USA. Adam touches on your new career, your second career as a broadcaster. Adam asks, what sort of data do you get in the commentary box during the race? So how does it differ from what you were looking at as a driver to what you're looking at now when you're calling the race?
Well, the data is just it's timing pages, basically, now. So you can see lap times as they're coming in. We've got a driver tracker in the commentary box, so you can see where everyone is on track, see who's going to be lapped soon or before the end of the race. And I mean, that's mainly it. Tire pages to see what tires people are on when they pitted. It's very basic compared to the driving stuff. So I can look up and absorb most of that pretty quickly, whereas the driving stuff, the detail is horrific.
And also, it's also what we are lucky enough to get, whether you're watching on Sky Sports in the UK or whether you're watching around the world in F1 TV, you can see a lot of that data that you guys have got during the commentary box on the F1 TV feed, on the app, on Sky Sports by pressing the red button. So we're lucky that we actually get a lot of the data that you guys are looking at in the commentary box as well.
And people love it as well, because you can see things like a pit stop when someone's running an undercut, and you can see their sector times coming out on their out laps versus someone on the in lap. This sort of stuff is important to see unfold, especially for commentators, to try and bring the story of, yeah, he's absolutely on it, this is going to be really close, or he's made a mistake and is not coming.
Jolyon, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, as always, to assess how successful this episode has been. Producer Jamie, once it's out into the world, will go away and look at the data and see how we've done. And we look forward to...
There's data on everything, isn't it? All the world over.
You won't believe it on podcast. There really is. No Grand Prix this weekend. But speaking of podcasts, don't forget to join Tom Clarkson and his esteemed guests on F1 Nation. They will preview and debrief the upcoming Brazilian Grand Prix. Former F1 driver Alan McNish, another one like your good self, Jolyon, who went from driving to the commentary box, Alan McNish, and Williams boss James Vowles are two of Tom's most recent guests on Beyond the Grids, the official F1 pod, which has in-depth interviews with some of the sport's biggest names. You were on that this season, weren't you? That was this season, wasn't it? Last season. There you go. Scroll back. You'll find Jolyon Palmer's Beyond the Grid, should you fancy. And right here on F1 Explains, we have new episodes every Friday. We'll be here right up until the end of the season, answering questions on stuff. This only works if you send us the questions, which you're doing brilliantly, but please keep it up. I don't want standards slipping because it's getting to the end of the season. Please keep going. We're nearly there, guys. F1 Explains at F1.com. Jolyon Palmer, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you. Thank you to Tom as well, Tom Stallard. Have a great week. That's it from us. Bye for now.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early! Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.